and he confessed greatly, without stinting, unstintingly. Vashav b'tshuva gemura v'kibel onsha. And he did a complete tshuva, and so he becomes a model for tshuva. This is how far you can fall, and yet you can recover from such a fall. You can do tshuva gemura, you can accept your punishment, v'zeh v'chavru avonotav, and his sins were forgiven. Okay, so, yes?
When you say the word sin, it's understood in column number one. In column number two, there's another definition that he was on a certain level. What he did was not that sin of Isha Isha. We all know that he sent the soldiers out and he gave them the gift and he returned it. It was retroactive. Of course, it wasn't with a married woman that was there. But the style was a sinful style. And the sin that is understood is not those five sins.
Number two, he has Zeb-chitut at the bottom line of the first column. Gedol v'melech ram v'nalei k'david. So you can say there he's saying it's an indignity, it's a disgrace for someone who's on the level of David. But in other places, number three, again, we don't have time to really go through them. Zeb emet avon plili la'amit at ha'isha zeh alo chamas b'kapav v'ein mirmah b'fiv, that he put Uri in front of the army so that he should be killed. And Barman goes on to make the point, you can't just have a battle with one person, which means you have to create a battle in which many soldiers were killed needlessly. That, I don't think, is just on the level of David. That's on the level of taking innocent life. Kachol b'nei Adam. I'm happy to talk about it, but I don't know. The sages say, but does the Barbanel say it? That's the question. He deals with the question of the Gemara, which says that they all were given a get, and he says that that does not help in this situation.
Which is more of the mouth, which means it's higher. There's different interpretations. We want to also judge it as a gross Hail Mary. After all, David, King of Israel, I read this, and almost all the prayers are coming from Hail Mary.
Okay.
This sinful man, he never repented, wants to read this.
Okay, that's a very good point.
He's coming from this. He's the prophet of Israel also.
Okay, so that's a very good point. That is going to be, I think, what we'll have to arrive at as some sort of bottom line. It's obviously inappropriate and unacceptable to view David HaMelech or Avram Avinu as a simple man, right? That would be to destroy our whole interest in their life story, right? Because I'm definitely a simple man, right? So why read about them? You can read about me. They're definitely not simple. So the question is, where is the balance? Where is that midpoint between what are obviously two detrimental, or at least one detrimental extreme and one questionably detrimental extreme? Yeah.
Okay. So if I could recommend, I know you have a lot left, but it's not a lot of time.
Okay.
Save the questions, get up to the end. Let him get the presentation.
Okay.
Oh,
okay. I have to listen to the rabbi.
We have a tight schedule, so I want to
okay. Get okay. Very good. Okay. Das Torah spoken. Okay.
Well,
so. Let's just turn to, again, my idea is more to expose the Mikarot. Each one deserves far more analysis than we're able to give in as many Mikarot that one could bring, obviously. Let's just look at two modern Mikarot, which I think point in very different directions, as you have on the second sheet. One is Rav Hirsch, the other is Rav Dessler. Rav Hirsch, he takes up an instance where Rabban is again critical of Avraham, in this case for having left Eretz Israel at a time of famine to go down to Egypt. Others had questioned, Barbanel is among those who questioned Ramban's approach to this issue. But what's interesting here is really his hakdama. Eventually, Rav Hirsch will go around to say, I'm not so sure Ramban is right. In fact, I suspect Ramban is wrong on this issue. But before saying that, he says as follows, that the Torah, he says, in principle, what Ramban says is acceptable. Because, as we heard earlier, the Torah does not whitewash the sins of our avot and imahot. Indeed, he makes the point in the second paragraph here that was made earlier. Just by that, it gives the stamp of veracity to what it relates. The fact that the Torah is so open about the truth, wherever the chips may fall, is a proof of the truth of the Torah, unlike other texts from antiquity. But he's quite clear that we do not say that anyone was perfect, although it puts the life of no man before us as the pattern out of which we are to learn what is right and good, what we have to do, what refrain from doing, where the word of God set a pattern before us for us to imitate. I found this very striking as well. It places no man born of dust. There God says, look at me, imitate me, wander in my ways. We are never to say this must be right for did not so-and-so do it. The Torah is no collection of examples of saints. It relates what occurred not because it was exemplary, but because it did occur, which is striking to me, especially because Rav Schwab, of course, is the spiritual descendant of Rav Hirsch. Now, you could say, again, my wife always tells me what to say, you could say that there's a difference. Rav Schwab is talking about fallible historical writers in our day who may criticize the previous generation and may get that critique wrong. Whereas you might say, something is written, Baruch HaKodesh, so Kodesh Baruch Hu can tell us the truth about previous generations in a wholly accurate way such that you might make that distinction. Nonetheless, it would be interesting to know, you know, what Rav Schwab might have said about this passage in Rav Hirsch. That's one modern source. Second, Rav Dessler, again, moving all too quickly, obviously. Rav Dessler raises this question of standards, and very, again, insightful passage, I think, where he says, as I mentioned earlier, when we say good, pretty bad, we're always presupposing a standard. And he says, what is the standard of the Torah? And he says, the standard of the Torah, when it comes to what he calls here Gedolei Olam, the greats of the world, the standard of the Torah is perfection, or near perfection at any rate. And so, interesting, he quotes here Rav Yitzchak Abarbanel Zatzal, so that leads me to believe, we read the passage in Shmuel, that he held that that was okay to say. But anyway, without getting into that, he says that, I'm going to have to paraphrase at this point, and you can read it for yourself, that when the Torah reports events of biblical heroes, like, for example, Reuven, who ostensibly slept with his father's shifcha, maidservant, but according to Chazal, did not do that, but merely rearranged some beds in order to protect the honor of his mother, Leah, for those who know the story. The Torah is reporting to us not the literal truth. And here I'm using terminology I heard from Rav David Gottlieb before Sameach. Is not reporting to us the literal truth of what happened, but the moral truth of what happened. And Rav Gottlieb says like this, if the Torah were to tell us what really happened, what would we think? We would say, okay, he moved to bed, so maybe that wasn't such a nice thing to do. Maybe that was a pagam. He should have honored his father a little more and understood his father knows what he's doing. But we would not have been able to feel the moral repulsion that the Torah wants us to feel in this case. So the Torah has to tell us something that will elicit from us the right moral reaction, the moral truth. So it has to say, he slept with his father's, he's a terrible thing. Because that, from the Torah's point of view, is what Reuven had done morally. If you want to know the history, so Rav Dessler says, you know what, Chazal will tell you what the history is. This is what he really did. But the Torah is a moral document. It's not a historical document. So it's interested in reporting the moral truth, and it has to report in a way that will elicit the right reactions. We're not like Reuven. We're not a simple person like Reuven. We're not on that level. So we're never going to appreciate, if the Torah tells us what really happened, how serious this was for someone like Reuven. It's only by reporting to us that David did what he did, or he deals with David, here you have it in the passage, or what Reuven did, what he did, in the way that it does, that it can elicit the right moral reaction. Right, maybe I'll stop here. You have one last source from one of the Chachmei Umot HaOlam. This is a passage from Kierkegaard's Fear and Trembling, which I can't even fully explicate to you, but I think it speaks to our issue, and I think deals with it in a way that's very powerful. And basically what Kierkegaard says is that when we approach Tanakh, you really can't afford to prescind from your entire life experience. You have to be what he calls frank and confident. In other words, you can't say, look, I'm in a different planet from these people. I can't understand them. I can't approach the text with any of my own life experience. That would not be to do justice to the eternity of Tanakh, to its instructive purpose for us. Now, I had a Shabbat guest over recently who studied with Nechama Leibowitz, who apparently said, Im hem malachim, ein li inyan behem. You know, I said, if these people were angels, I have no interest in them. I can't learn from them. They're not relevant to me. On the other hand, Kierkegaard says, and this is the other side of the equation, you should not push yourself shamelessly forward and thrust yourself upon his kinship with them, etc., etc. You you have to be careful not to be impudent, to think that David Amel is just a simple person like any other person, that Avraham Avinu is a simple person, that Sarai Maimon is a simple person. They're obviously not simple people. Otherwise, again, they have no interest for us if they're just simple people like us. They were obviously radically different from us. So that balance, which is obviously a very tense and difficult balance to achieve, it seems to me is, however one parses this whole issue in the Mikarot that we've seen and others that we didn't, is going to have to be part of what we come up with in terms of our attitude towards this issue. Okay, I'll stop there, and if we have questions or comments or observations or insights, yeah.
What I don't understand with the story with David is, no one seems to touch on this, when Nathan comes to excoriate David, he doesn't say, you committed adultery, you're chayav misa. This is what I don't understand. He's excoriating. He's saying, this is unbelievably immoral. But he doesn't say, you committed adultery. And which leads me to believe, perhaps, he did commit adultery, that what the Gemara says is perhaps correct. That perhaps there was some kind of get involved. And no one that I know of, but I'm sure someone does, raises the obvious question, what do you mean? He's uriah hachite. There's not a proper marriage here. Does anyone raise that?
There's Kedushin, well, tells him by because he's a Hittite.
By a non-Jew, let alone a Hittite. Who should have been killed.
But there is an idea
of
even if it's not Kedushin with it going, there's an idea of them, you know, cohabiting in a way that creates a relationship.
But she was Jewish, but Sheva was Jewish. That's between two non-Jews, between a Jew and a non-Jew. There's no marriage ceremony. It's not considered anything. But does anyone raise that? Because I've never seen it raised by any of the classical commentaries.
It's not a Kedushin, so there's no issue.
But
he's Uriah Hachiti.
No, he's a Hachiti.
Something else.
All right, other.
No, but to add to that, but the idea of boy and Malchus, there is so little textual evidence for that. That is the rabbis grasping straws. There's almost no textual evidence for that. It's like grappling on a word. He said a word. Not boy and Malchus, that's anything.
All right, so that's the question. At what point do you say this is Darche Adrash, as Abarbanel says? You see, Abarbanel doesn't work well here because often we say there's Pshuto and there's Midrasho, right? Rashi brings two. And we say, they're complementary, or at least they're not contradictory, but Nimrod. Nimrod cannot be a tzaddik al pi pshuto and a rush al pi midrash. Right? Either it's a tzaddik or it's a rasha, or
no,
somewhere in between.
No, why not? A rush can do anything.
No, but what does it mean that al pi pshuto, I'm a very nice person, but al pi midrash, I'm a terrible person? I mean, it doesn't seem to me in this instance that our standard notions of complementarity will work when it comes to moral evaluation.
It's
at least
like Star Trek, this parallel universe.
Okay, yeah. Right.
I do want to point out two other points. One is, I believe it's the thief who says that you shouldn't really write about by Abba.
Right.
Because you don't really know. And I can tell you, when they write about Rav Yoshe Ber Soloveitcher,
right,
they write about Rav Moshe Feinstein,
right,
they write the stories. The intention that they had when they did a deed or whatever their kavana, whatever was going on, was much deeper than what they don't know. They didn't go into the mind of the depth of the analysis of what the Shakovich talks about. These great scholars, where
right,
they did an action or said something. So when they're being quoted, it's limited. There's one thing that I want to say is
that was one of my good digressions, by the way. Yeah.
The other point, the final point is, I feel that by those who write these and whitewash, what they're doing is anyone, for the sake of education of a child, the child sees, wow, that is Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. By the way, a good is Israel. When you see the pictures of the cards with his beard, that wasn't his passport. They drew the beard longer. I can tell you. Child now can fall down flat on his face and say, he or she can say, I can't live up to this and goodbye, but if they see that the scholar and the role model didn't live up totally and still they came back, so in their own life, when they fall down, they say, that scholar fell down and came back, I'm not perfect,
right,
maybe I will come back, there's some hope, rather than it's like you can't reach the level and you can give up and the kids can crash.
And as a whole, these are all subjects in themselves, but maybe we'll tackle them another time.
Food for thought,
right.
Okay, thank you, Eric.
Okay.
Dr. Lowry.
Eric.
We'll go back to our split classes, so you have to make a decision. Ivana Sober, who's right here, will be speaking right here in this room, and Rabbi Shochat will be speaking upstairs. I tell you that we have only a one-way door. It only works in. It doesn't work out. And also, whoever has not signed in, please sign in. I don't even know where the sheets are. Where the sheets? Please sign in and please put an email address. That's the most important thing. We'll take a 2-minute break. Ilana Silver will be here, and Rabbi Shochet upstairs. And thank you all very much.
Here. Over here. She's up there.